Welcome to the DL.
It's Tuesday morning. Nick, I made a joke the other day on Twitter that I had no clue what we were going to do for our last show. You and I might just sing songs from Cats.
Yeah, I got to get my pipes warmed up, I suppose.
My favorite thing about Twitter is the only person to respond to that was a Twitter bot for Mr. Mistopheles.
Yeah, that was creepy.
Somebody, for people who don't know, one of the main characters of Cats, and I had to watch that like 10 times in college because a girl we used to live with was in theater and she actually loved Cats. So I actually know all the songs. Probably could do a show where you and I sing Cats. Somebody is one of the characters on Twitter and just responds to anyone who mentions Cats and said, "I would love that episode." I thought, this is creepy to me.
Yeah, this whole Twitter thing is odd in that way, because I'm like, that person's clearly not following you, but how did they find that so quickly?
Yeah, it was within like 10 minutes. Like, somebody has a window open for anyone that mentions the musical Cats. God bless you, internet. This is how this is going to go. I believe that Josh Elliott is going to be on tomorrow. I believe. I sent an email to a bunch of people, because I actually did come up with an idea for our last show. And I sent an email to a bunch of people last night to try and get some help with that. One of those people was AJ Delario, and he wrote back, I assumed I was going to be on one of the last few shows. And I said, I did too. Everything sort of got away from me. I had to go up and do a meeting yesterday, so I was going to try and get him on this show, but then I wasn't around yesterday to tape it. So hopefully in the next 2 days, Delario will be on, at least in some capacity. But the last show should be pretty fun. It should be fun. But alas, two left, whatever. Today we're going to talk a little bit about normal stuff. We're going to try and keep this show as normal as possible, but keep it to media stuff. And the two stories that we want to address, and we'll take it in this order, are Tara Sullivan not being allowed in the locker room at the Masters, which became a huge story on Sunday and an even bigger story on Monday. So we'll talk about it on Tuesday, which is normally what we do. And then Manny Ramirez, who stole all of our I'm leaving thunder on Friday by announcing his retirement. So we'll get to both of those. But let's start with the Tara Sullivan thing. For full disclosure, and I think we need to start with this, Nick, we know Tara Sullivan very, very well. I mean, I've known Tara Sullivan for like 15 years. I mean, I think we need, before we play both sides of this, I think that needs to be disclosed, right?
I don't know her at all, so I'm not going to pretend that I do.
You don't know her at all? Really?
No, I mean, I was only there for 9 months, so I didn't get too intimate with a lot of the press. So as a person, no, I did not know her.
Right,
you did.
I did, very well. And she's very nice. And she's a good reporter. And the first thing that I thought of, and this is why I fully disclose, when I came to the information that Tara Sullivan was not allowed in the Masters locker room, my thought was one of the players probably didn't want her in there because she would just talk their ear off. And this, I'll start it with a joke. If you, we used to cover, I used to be at basketball practice and at football practice. And when Rutgers football practice, they used to do after practice, this is the most antiquated system. All the kids used to have dining hall. They used to have dinner after practice because practice was in the late afternoon. So we'd go over there and we'd eat with the players and we'd hang out with the media. And then the players would get to eat and relax with their teammates. And then afterwards, a couple kids would have to stick around and answer questions. And I swear to you, you're looking at 35 to 40 minutes after every player is gone. Whoever she was doing a story on that week was still there talking. I mean, she would get as in-depth as anyone. So when you read her story about trying to get the story, she is one of those reporters who will get as in-depth as possible. I'm telling you, Rory McIlroy would have missed his flight if Tara Sullivan had gotten to him.
Oh, yeah, and that's while it's a sign of a good and thorough reporter as sort of media wranglers, it makes you want to jump out of a window because you're just like, oh, come on.
Go home.
And wrap this up and go.
I have a family. Go home. So do you. You have kids. Go home.
Exactly.
All right, but to pull that back, I mean, that's sort of the funny anecdote in all this. But the serious, quote-unquote, nature of this is that Tara Sullivan put out a tweet after this whole thing happened, and she said, I wasn't allowed in the locker room and at the Masters, which turned into an internet indictment of the old guard. I thought that women just weren't allowed to play. I can't believe they're not allowed to do their jobs as reporters either, and blah, 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 blah. She then wrote a blog post about it and explained sort of step by step. She didn't cast judgment on them. She just gave the facts. And the facts, according to Tara Sullivan, were Rory McIlroy was walking off after he signed his card, and a bunch of reporters were following. And usually players stop at this oak tree and do their stuff there, but obviously the kid was a little bit out of sorts and didn't really want to talk, so he continued to go into the locker room. The horde of media followed him. She was in that horde, tried to follow him. A female security guard stopped her and said, women aren't allowed in the locker room because there's an open bathroom in there and you're not allowed in. And she said, that's not true, I am. The security guard said, I'm sorry, no, you're not. And if you want to go ask the male security guard, he's not going to let you in either. She then went out onto the course, did a little bit more background on the 10th hole, which is the one that McIlroy really collapsed on, came back, got quotes from people, then sent that tweet, which led to the wheels in motion of not only an official apology from the people at the Masters, but a personal apology to her. That's the facts of what she wrote. And then the internet went nuts on her. So based on those facts, was this much ado about nothing? Was this a security guard who has too many keys? I mean, we always talk about that. The guys in the building who always have the most keys think they're the most important. I mean, was this that blown up in the internet age, or was this a justified response to the old guard Masters screwing over women?
Well, I think it's largely it's of course a little bit of both, but what the main, I think, point to be taken from this is the instantaneous nature of Twitter and other social media, in that even though she didn't tweet it right, because a lot of times you tell people, you know, count to, you know, 60, count to 90 before you do a tweet. She did have time. She had time to do some things and walk around and get some other quotes. And then, you know, it was more of an offhanded, I'm annoyed at this and I'm going to share my frustration, because that's what you can do now. And the second she did that, you know, I don't follow her, but it didn't take long for, I think it was Woj or somebody just totally.
Yeah, Woj and Richard Deitch and a bunch of her friends. I mean, look, she's connected. I mean, she works for the record. I mean, she is a New York writer. She is connected. This got on CNN quickly. I mean, this became a national story.
Yeah, it got so that this is how quickly information is disseminated, and right or wrong, it goes out that quickly. So this is her, you don't know what her motive was behind it. It could have been, hey, I want to do this because I want to, you know, expose them, or it could have just been, I'm a little bit annoyed. I feel like sharing this, and no matter what the motivation, it's out there. And once it's out there, it is wildfire, and it spreads, and therefore, like you said, it becomes this indictment of the old guard. It becomes this huge, and it went on for the rest of the night that I was paying attention. It was people retweeting it, people talking about it. So, right or wrong, she got it out there, and all of a sudden, it was the story. Now, you know, whatever the explanation for it is, that you can't afford to have any missteps these days, because if you do, they will be found out immediately. And that's people sort of need to prep all of their staff and everybody on is be on guard, especially with the media, because the second you do something wrong, it's going to get out there. And it's very hard to prepare people for.
Well, look, the Masters is at fault for this reason. You have security guards out in front of the locker room. They need to know the locker room rules. So this is not a guy who was just walking with the play. I mean, this I'm trying to think of a parallel situation. This is not somebody who didn't happen to be outside the locker room and wouldn't let her, you know, cross a line on the green after the, you know, because you're not allowed to do that during the tournament, and the tournament was over and they didn't know the rule. This was somebody who, the Masters, who Augusta National Golf Course stationed outside the locker room. That person needs to know the rule. Not every security guard, but the people out there. So that's a fault of the system. But this is my issue with what Tara wrote. And again, she's right. I mean, she needs to be in the locker room if that's the story. I mean, you can't just let the men in. And if you do that, then you do it like what soccer does. International soccer pools the reporters. Nobody's allowed in the locker room in international soccer matches. They pool the reporters, or poll the reporters, whatever you want to say, before the end of the match. And they pull out a couple people to make sure that they pull aside. But every player walks through basically a cattle call, and then reporters just there's a gate, you know, to separate the reporters from the players, and you just get them when you can. And some players sneak past quickly, and some players hang out for a half an hour. It's actually it's harder for the reporters to do their jobs, but it's better because there's none of this. You don't have to deal with this. But failing that, and it's hard to do with the Masters because there's not a team; it's individual players. Everyone's got to be allowed in. That all being said, this is how she ended her blog post, which is. She explained all the facts, and I said it was just facts, but maybe it wasn't, because this is her last paragraph. Quote, the issue touched a nerve for many reasons. Augusta National does not allow women members, so perhaps security personnel could be confusing club policy with Masters policy. But women journalists have every right to be allowed wherever their male colleagues go, a right already determined by law. If they want to close the locker room for interviews, then they have to do it for everyone, not just me. And she is absolutely 100% right in that. Except two paragraphs earlier, she explained that it was a miscommunication. She explained that the Masters people apologized. So then to chide them for not letting her in, well, but they were supposed to let you in. So it's she's playing both sides of it here. That's the part that her commenters destroyed her on. Like, you just explained that it was a miscommunication and they profusely and publicly apologized. And now you're saying, well, that's against the law. But it was a mistake. So I think that she sort of deserves to get ripped on.
I guess perhaps her, which I guess she was attempting to say, maybe poorly, was that, you know, the fact that they don't let women in. She said it. The fact that it could have spilled over to people not getting what, you know, not understanding, other people who were involved in the club not understanding. But it wasn't the right sort of place to put it or way to say it to end up with. It probably was better somewhere in the body of, or so, you know, even maybe in the beginning. But to put it at the very end to sort of wrap things up, right, it leaves that taste in people's mouths, like she is talking out of both sides of her mouth. And look, this whole Masters thing has been a touchy situation. It will continue to be a touchy situation as long as women are allowed in the club. And when something like this happens, it just gets people – the reason people talk, whether right or wrong, and they're not – thinking about the fact that the policy isn't to bar women from the locker room, reporters, they just want to bring this up. They want to discuss. It still burns people. To this day, people are still annoyed that women are not allowed in, and they'll look for any excuse to bring that back up. And I think that's sort of the case of what's happening here.
Right. Again, I agree with you on that. And you're absolutely right. Maybe that was a poorly placed paragraph. And it is important to remind people that this is a club that does not let women in. It's very important to remind people of that because we sort of forget about the protests. What, 5, 10 years? How many years ago was that? Probably 10.
Well, at least 10, if not more, I feel like.
Can you imagine if that happened in the Twitter age? Protests like that? But the whole thing that gets to me, Adam Zagoria, who I like very much and who used to work with Tara Sullivan, he writes a very popular basketball blog. He does stuff with SNY. So he took to that, and basically the headline of his post was "Readers missing the boat on Masters discrimination." And he took to task some of Tara Sullivan's comments, saying, "Quit your bitching, stop going on CNN and trying to make yourself the story." That's what most of the people in her comments were saying to her. And his point is, no, the media has a right to be in the locker room. Now he brought up his own personal experience, which I think was Bobby Gonzalez. It could have been Freddie Hill, but I think it was Bobby Gonzalez because he covers one of those two teams, Seton Hall or Rutgers, where he brought up that a Big East coach would not let him in the locker room after a game because he had written something bad about this. Now here's what Adam Zagoria wrote. Quote, "I had a similar experience 2 years ago when I was denied access to a Big East men's basketball team's locker room simply because the coach did not like what I had written. A staff employee literally stood in my way and told me the coach said I couldn't go in alongside the other 10 reporters and offered to take my tape recorder in for me. Though I was shocked and stunned, I ended up giving it to him and getting the recorder back. But I wasn't able to ask my own questions or see the athletes as they responded. Luckily, this incident transpired at the end of the season. The coach was soon fired and normalcy was restored. But had it gone on all season, I would have been at a competitive disadvantage simply because I was denied equal access." And that's what the Sullivan incident is about at its very core. I think it's Seton Hall, but I'm not sure. And it doesn't matter. It's not germane to this. I just like trying to figure out who he was talking about. But the point there, I totally disagree with. Does the media, the governing body of sports, do they have a right in a locker room if you're going to let one in, you have to let everyone in? I mean, it's petulant. It's cheap and it's immature of a coach not to let a certain reporter in. But is there a law? Tara Sullivan's talking about a law, like equal for one, equal for all. But Adam Zagoria is just like, I wrote something bad. The coach doesn't like me. It's not fair. I can't do my job. I don't know if I agree with him on this.
Well, see, that is a tough. I think I'm leaning towards agreeing with him on that one, only because if you're denying working people the access to do their job, and you're letting some in but not others. Arbitrarily, because if it's someone who has never had the right, never had a press pass, has never been granted a press pass, and they say to them, "No, you're not a legitimate organization. You can't come in." That's one thing that you have the right to do that. But when someone has a pass and has been covering a team all season long, and you single them out because you don't like what they say, I think that is it's not discrimination. That's the wrong word for it, but it's I don't think you should or could be able to. I mean, I suppose their organization could say, no, you can't come in, but I think he would have a gripe. I think he would have the ability to complain to somebody over someone's head, get someone in trouble, and get in the door, because that is, to me, very arbitrary, and as you said, and it's simply, I don't like you, I'm not letting you in.
Right.
But it's not saying, well, you're from an organization we don't consider to be legitimate, therefore you can't come in here. So I think he has somewhat of a point there, but it's when you're comparing it to discrimination against women, it makes the point have a little less punch to it.
Right. No, I think that's my point. He should have been allowed in the locker room. Don't get me wrong. For people who are going to get mad at me saying, you know, the team shouldn't have a no jerks allowed sign because no reporters would be allowed in the locker room if there was a no jerks allowed. It's a stupid thing that the coach did. That being said, it has nothing to do with a security guard saying somebody can't go in because she's a woman. I mean, it's totally opposite. That is discrimination based on gender. What Adam Zaguri is talking about is he had a beef with a coach. I mean, look, we've known people who have had credentials pulled because they've written something bad about a player or overstepped their bounds. It's not right, but I just, and again, maybe this is because the show's ending and I feel sort of disenfranchised by things, but get over yourself. I mean, if you wrote something bad, you're a college writer. You wrote something bad about the team or the coach. The coach was about to get fired. He feels that you're contributing to him getting fired. He doesn't want you around. That's not discrimination. That's not equal access because your paper assigned you to that beat. I don't know if the team has to necessarily let you in. The Phillies, I think still don't let bloggers in the actual clubhouse. They let the regular, at least as of last year, and they could have changed it this year. The Phillies did not let bloggers in the clubhouse. They could go into the press box. They can go into the press conference, but they are not allowed to interview players in the clubhouse. Yet you look at the quote unquote beat writers. They write stuff all the time about what happens, you know, behind the scenes in the clubhouse. But the Phillies drew a line in the sand. That's not equal access. So it's always arbitrary. It's completely and utterly always arbitrary. Now, you don't single out one publication, but we've had so many instances where a guy gets banned or because a coach is a bully and doesn't like someone. It's funny that he brought up this, and I know I'm using one little point that a guy wrote in defense of Tara Sullivan, but I think the media sort of needs to back off and say, it's not a law. We're covering this because that's our job. People like to read about sports. We give them that information, but I don't think it earns them any sort of right. Maybe the fact that the credential, everyone who has the same credential should have equal access. Yes, in that case, Zaguri is right. I don't know. I think it's a high horse situation.
Well, no, and that was my point. I think that's where you have to stick with this one, which is if you have the same credential as the guy next to you, that's what I meant, the blogger thing. If an organization deems them unworthy to come in and does not issue them a credential, well, that's one thing. You don't have it. You can't come in. And when, as antiquated or, you know, as living in the past as that may be, it's how they run the thing. But if you've had this credential next all year long and you and all the people with the same thing are trying to go in and they say no, well then, hey, there's something wrong with that. But it really goes back to the heart of the matter, which is, you know, discriminating against women. And that is something that, yes, I can imagine in this day and age, where you think, all right, we're over all this stuff, and it gets brought back. That just brings back every horrible thing that you've been through as a reporter over the last, you know, however many years she's been doing it. It just says, oh, my God, we're back to this, and it's 2011. And you really thought that we'd all moved on and we all, you know, updated our lives into the current century. And when that's brought back, I can, you know, the bottom line is I can see where feelings are hurt and you're going to snap. You snap back a little bit, not snap and want to kill people, but just, you know, you're going to want to bite back a bit by saying, oh yeah, you're going to pull this crap again. Well, here's what I had to say about that. And you throw out on Twitter and something and this is what happens. But we've been through it. So it's hard for us.
Oh, right. No, absolutely.
Any of us to say, like, what it would be like to say, no, you can't come in here. Again, I think it brings up bad memories. So it's a tough situation and it deserves to be, looked upon from many angles. But at the end of the day, you know, she should have been allowed in the locker room. And a misunderstanding can lead to a firestorm like this where several days later, we're still talking.
Everyone in the media should be defending her. Again, I question the way that she worded it because I do wonder if she sends out a tweet later in the day, because of the nature of the tweet, I assumed that it was immediately after. Like, she got blown off by a security guard, walked out in the hallway and was like, F this, I can't believe this happened. You know, it turns out that it was like hours later and she was trying to get in touch with people at the Masters and, you know, trying to rectify it. And then she put that tweet out. But I do wonder if she had worded the tweet security guard at the Masters overstepped her bounds, wouldn't let me in the locker room. Good job by the PR people to apologize to me personally, but I still missed my interview. If everyone would have been as vociferous about this situation. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if this situation goes back to, and again, fault of them for having the security people at that door not know the actual rule. But I do wonder if that tweet was worded. And it goes back to people read what you write on Twitter. You know, sometimes you write something stupid and sometimes you write something that millions of people talk about and it gets you on television and it becomes a national news story. And you never know when that's going to happen. You never know when the next person's going to retweet that and say, oh my God. And then that person retweets it and all of a sudden it's on like AP's breaking news.
No, and that is the lesson of the day from the very beginning of this, which is it's amazing how quickly this stuff spreads. And as soon as it happens, you're right. It's news everywhere, right or wrong. And that's the thing. And we've talked about this over the course of the show many times, which is you got to look into stuff first because, you know, she could have tweeted something about, I mean, in a golf tournament, oh, so-and-so or somebody with a fake Twitter handle with her name said so-and-so broke his, you know, his leg walking to the locker room and all of a sudden that's news. And you know what? It's not. It's not true. So Twitter is a dangerous, dangerous thing, as amazing as it is, as much as we all love it. Every day, I think it is proven to have a power that we almost can't control, like the sun or something.
Right. I wrote something the other day for another project I'm working on, and I said, Twitter is the wild, wild west. It's unwieldy, and it's amazing. I think it's all of those things in one. It's the greatest and worst tool ever created. Maybe not either of those, but you know
what? That and the nuclear bomb. You know,
the wheel. I mean, I still think the wheel. Maybe the sprocket. Speaking of sprocket, I got a great thing coming up in a couple of days. Maybe tomorrow. Maybe today.
Space sprockets?
No, a different sprocket. People are Fraggle.
Dieter?
People are Fraggle fans.
Oh.
You will get that. Let's use the Fraggles to transition to Manny Ramirez as we drop in a little bit of music. Manny Ramirez announced on the same day that Free Darko announced that they are quitting. Manny Ramirez failed a drug test in spring training and decided to quit baseball rather than get suspended, which I would do. I mean, I think if you're his age and you've made as much money as him and you're on the Tampa Rays and you're sort of at the tail end of your career anyway, why deal with it? Why deal with the suspension? Although there's talk. Somebody in Cleveland was mentioning that the Indians should sign him, let him sit out his time that he suspended and then bring him back for the middle of the season as a DH and part-time fielder, which would be incredible. It'd be like an Iverson coming back to Philly situation, I would think. But I want to get your take on the media response to this. I was listening, God, I don't know why, to New York radio on the way up to Rutgers yesterday for a couple of minutes. And they had people calling in, Manny Ramirez, look at his body when he was in Cleveland and now look at his body with the Red Sox. That never came up when he was, I mean, there was a couple pictures of Manny when he was playing and people were like, wow, that guy's bigger than I thought. Did his baggy uniform hide steroid use for so many years?
Absolutely. It absolutely did. I think there's no question because I'll never forget a couple of things. One, he was taking batting practice for the Dodgers one day, and he had his shorts, and he has these like spindly little legs. Like, I mean, obviously he works on his upper body like crazy, but it was sort of almost like, whoa, we didn't know what was under that guy's uniform in the way of his legs. And it looks completely odd because we're so used to the huge uniform. And furthermore, I've read people say things like, oh my gosh, if you see, you know, I know Manny wears this big, crazy uniform, but if you've ever seen him, you know, in t-shirt working out in spring training, you won't believe that this guy's enormous. So I don't know if that was specifically the reason, but boy, it sure did help him escape a lot of suspicion because people weren't saying this guy's a monster, got so much bigger. No, it was this guy's got a hilarious uniform and funny hair.
As a complete non sequitur, by the way, I hate Skype. And I said this on the show either here or on Zirkle's show the other day. If anybody asks why I'm stopping the show, it's because I hate the new Skype. Everything you just said, as I cough through this angrily, everything you just said was like Tron. Get it together, Skype. Your new system sucks. And every other call is pixelated. And you can't hear it. But what you're saying, and we heard most of it, was, yeah, I mean, it's amazing how big he was, but nobody knew. We always thought he was like this sort of fat, dumpy guy in left field. It's brilliant. It's just a brilliant strategy. Wear the baggiest clothes possible, and nobody realizes that you're as big as anybody. You know, you're like, who's the guy that used to play Gabe Kapler out there? But you wear a baggy uniform, and nobody knows. But let me ask you this, and this will be the last question we talk about. People are calling up yesterday on the show that I was listening to, questioning whether or not Manny Ramirez is a Hall of Famer. Saying, oh, I knew all along something was up with that guy. People say he's the best right-handed hitter of all time. BS. He was a drug user his whole... If we don't put Barry Bonds and Manny Ramirez in the Hall of Fame, regardless of what they did, if they are not in the Hall of Fame, I feel that does more to invalidate the concept of a Hall of Fame than it does maintain the sanctity of it. With how many cheaters and liars and horrible people we've inducted into that Hall of Fame or any sports Hall of Fame, just put it on their plaque. It's mind-boggling to me that we are now so self-righteous about this, and it's the media who get to vote these people in, that we would not put in Manny Ramirez and Barry Bonds, and Mark McGwire for that matter, because they did something that was against the rule. It's mind-boggling to me. Go back and look through everything that everyone in the Hall of Fame did. Do you agree with that, or am I on my own high horse?
I'm fully torn on this issue at this point, because I mean, a lot of it was because I think we lived through this era, and to us, it's the main era of baseball that we watched, and we have sort of a protective feeling about it in that, well, geez, you know, I don't want to believe that everything that I love was a lie, and that's hard for people of our age, and it's easier for people who are, you know, 10 years our senior to sit and bitch and moan about this era because they went through, you know, granted, we did watch baseball in the 80s, but we weren't that old. If that was your main era that you watched baseball, then you feel protected. Well, look, these guys weren't putting up the numbers because they couldn't, because they weren't enhanced. Now, obviously, we know they were enhanced in other things with the greenies and whatever else is going around. But so you look at the players and you figure, A, well, okay, probably the pitchers were also on something, so it was a fairly even playing field. And B, frankly, it wasn't against the rules. They weren't breaking the rule. That's the thing everyone fails to bring up. There was no steroid testing in baseball. If you chose to use steroid, you were taking a chance of breaking the law, but you were not breaking the rules of baseball. And until they put that testing in, you weren't doing anything technically wrong. Now, that's where Manny comes in. I think he's a little bit different because he failed two tests now. And Heyman threw this in his column, and it is a little – I didn't even realize it yesterday – that he failed some kind of test in 03 that was just a preliminary, like, hey, let's just test a bunch of people to see what's out there. So now that one wasn't official, but the other two were. And when you fail two tests, I think that is the case for people could say – if as a writer you want to say, listen, this guy continually broke the rules of baseball, and yes, it was the end of his career, but he did it nonetheless. I can see more where you would say, no, we're not going to let him in. But the other guys, I have a harder time saying no because – again, they were just doing what was out there to get a competitive advantage. They were, and I don't like it. I don't agree with it, but it was not against the rules of baseball.
I think the concept of a Hall of Fame, and I've been to the Hall of Fame, and it's a beautiful place, and it's wonderful. But look, and I've been to the Hockey Hall of Fame, and I've been to, you know, not basketball, but other halls of fame, so to speak. And the worst rooms in every Hall of Fame are the rooms with the plaques. It doesn't tell you anything. It's just a face on a bust or a name on a wall and a little tiny bio about what they did. What I love about the Hall of Fame or these museums is the history of the game. You walk through, you see the different uniforms, you see the different hats, you see the different gloves and bats and shoes that they used to wear. You learn about the history of the game. You cannot tell the story of baseball without Barry Bonds, without Manny Ramirez, without Roger Clemens, without Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa. You can't do that. You can't just whitewash an era. So I'm not suggesting necessarily that you put them on a wall next to Willie Mays. But you think Babe Ruth was squeaky clean? Come on. You think Ty Cobb? I mean, we know Ty Cobb wasn't squeaky clean. Now, did they cheat the actual game? Pete Rose, you know, cheated the actual game? You can't tell the story of baseball without Pete Rose. Pete Rose is more famous than he ever would have been as a player because of what happened. And that needs to be chronicled somewhere in that museum. And I think that if I were starting the Hall of Fame right now, I would blow it up. I would never induct people into the Hall of Fame. I would just make it a history museum and tell the story. Now, it's self-aggrandizing and you pat people on the back and it gives you a day where thousands and thousands of people flock every year to your place and it keeps you relevant that you induct people. But I think they become trapped by their own device because now there's so much gray that we don't know what to do. But to leave those guys out, just make a separate wing. Just make an asterisk wing and induct people into that. But they need to be in that building.
And I suppose the argument they'll make is that, well, they are in because, you know, I'm sure Barry Bonds' bat is there, and there's a Manny Ramirez bat. He did something crazy in there. The stuff is in there. So they'll tell you, well, we are not ignoring their accomplishments because they're in here, but we're not going to make them a member of our club because we do, you know, we don't, those who elect members of this club don't agree with what they did. I have a hard time indicting those who do not want to vote for someone who used steroids, either proven or unproven, and the ones who are unproven are pretty clear. But at the same time, I agree with you in that you're cheating people out of sort of looking at their accomplishments and understanding the era better. I have no problem with a separate wing. But this Hall of Fame, of all the Hall of Fames, and trust me, there were arguments at the NBA Hall of Fame a couple weeks ago, but the baseball one is the most sanctimonious. It's the one that they like really do consider their club, and it ain't going to happen. And it ain't going to happen until they change the rules, and I don't see them changing the rules anytime.
No, I understand. I totally understand. But, you know.
A boy can dream.
DL it on the DLpodcast.com. That's the email address for however long. Talk to everybody tomorrow.